Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
I'm Mike Glute along with Dane Martinez. Bringing you the Tuesday edition of Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for joining us. Go over the action that happened last night, start to get you ready for some waiver wires, and just take a really long look at the weekend. I know Dane and Scott did that a little bit this morning, a little bit yesterday, but here we are. So, Dane, let's get started, man. We watched the game last night. First of all, how are you doing? How's your weekend?
I'm doing all right.
How'd you do across the fantasy landscape?
Listen, you're baiting me here, Blewett. You're baiting me. And I know you are, and I'm not going to play your game. In two leagues right now, I stand at 2-0 with the highest amount of points. My long-term dynasty league, where I put up 194 last week on the strength of Patty Mahomes and Stephon Diggs. There's another league that I know you know about, where I'm 2-0, where we are 2-0, and we got 90 points on the competition. I know my man Bones is hearing me. I want to make sure that Bones is the escrow for that league. We got to talk about that. But then I lost in another league, Mike, that I know you are eminently aware of. I needed big outings from both Brandon Marshall and Allen Robinson last night. I will say this, I'm encouraged by what I saw from Allen Robinson, but it was not enough to surpass the deficit I had against some guy named Mike Blewett on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, so Dane and I played this weekend. Pretty good matchup. He had Ben Roethlisberger that obviously had a monster day. I'm off to a good start in these two leagues that Dane and I talk about the most. In fact, a third league that I'm off to a good start in, too, is Scott Fishbowl. So I'm 2-0 in the Granite Street Tavern League. I'm 2-0 in Scott Fishbowl. And I'm 2-0 in the Carton and Friends League, where Dane and I own a team together. We're the highest scoring team there. I'm looking at my GST standings. Just barely. I'm the highest scoring team there so far. So I'm off to a good start. But I said to Chris Pavona, who is hemming and hawing, our producer, hemming and hawing, being like, wow, what are you guys doing? You're kicking everybody.
It's still early.
That's the thing. I don't really want to be the best team now. I hope I'm the best team 3 months from now. But I have to be feel really good about the early returns on that GST team. I didn't have anybody going last night. I think I was in the clubhouse. You needed Marshall and who? Robinson?
And AR-15. I was down by like 45 or so, so I needed big games from both of them. I was encouraged by Allen Robinson at halftime. There was a point where I was like, if one or both of these guys get a touchdown, I may have a shot. But that wound up not happening. I wound up losing by about 20.
Yeah, so so Dane and I had a pretty good matchup there. I had pretty good outings across the board, other than George Kittle.
Listen, Blewett, you're dominating. You deserve it. You're dominating in a lot of leagues. Everybody needs to listen to Fantasy Sports Today because the stuff Mike Blewett is saying is coming to fruition. This guy with A.J. Green with a huge game. He has James Conner in every single one of his leagues. You know, Mike Blewett is helping you win your leagues and win that cash.
Well, thank you for saying that, Dane. So, yeah, off to a good start. No complaints there. So, last night's game, we can get into some of these other leagues and stuff a little bit later as we go through waiver wire decisions. You know, the good thing, as you know, the good thing about having some depth it's always good to have depth on your teams, but it always creates this Sunday morning conundrum. I was like, you know what? This is a coin flip. I don't know what to do right here. I can tell you the other day in one league, now it didn't cost me. It cost me a bunch of points, but it didn't cost me. I was going to lose anyway because my opponent had a really good day, but I had a Patty Mahomes – Jimmy Garoppolo decision, and I was really going down to the wire on it, and I was back and forth. I had them both in the starting position, and I just thought, let me just take the guy that's at home and feeling comfortable. So I went with Garoppolo. Bad call, obviously. Pat Mahomes went off. So you're going to have decisions like that. And we have some depth on our team together where we're going to be there every week being like, we put Randall Cobb in or we take him out.
Right.
So those things happen. And to those of you in those leagues, I completely understand. It really does happen also when you have depth, but also in shallower leagues where it creates
everybody's
more
good
depth. Yeah, right. It creates depth at on a lot of teams. So in 10-team leagues or in 12-team leagues where you're not starting that many players, you've got a lot of tough decisions to make every week, and I'm in a couple of leagues like that as well. So, Dane, last night, really tough night for Seattle. I think we see all the problems that are evident with that team. Now, they're going up against a team that has a very legitimate pass rush, but 5 sacks in the first half, 6 overall, and it's, I mean, he can only, Russell Wilson can only be a one-man show only so often. At some point, they're going to need to protect him, and it's not happening right now.
Yep, I completely agree with you. He got sacked 6 times week one against Denver, another 6 times last night against Chicago, and I think that's the broader point, right? I think this offense is bereft of playmakers, of dynamic talent, with the lone exception of Russell Wilson himself. And I said this last hour, Mike, you know, I mean, there is no Doug Baldwin. There is no running back really to speak of. Carson was nondescript. I thought Rashad Penny in a drive in the second half actually looked a little bit more spry. Maybe he's going to get work in as time goes on, but there's nothing, like, let's put it this way. If you are a defensive coordinator and you are facing the Seattle Seahawks in the next upcoming weeks, you're saying, let's do what we can to put pressure on Russell, try to keep him in the pocket, not let him play schoolyard football. And outside of that, I'm comfortable saying that our defense can win our matchups against the skilled players of the Seattle Seahawks. Tyler Lockett is supposed to be a thing. He had one deep pass, but he doesn't seem to be a consistent weapon being utilized in this offense. And so I have the Seahawks as pretty much like nondescript with the exception of Danger Russ himself.
I mean, you basically had 3 startable players on Seattle last night. Russell Wilson, and only because they had a 11-play, 99-yard drive to
garbage time
close out the game. It saved all of Russell's stats to some extent. Tyler Lockett was a startable player last night. He scores the touchdown, and then Will Disley ends up with a startable effort. You know, he scores a touchdown with seconds left, but nonetheless, three catches for 42 yards and a score. That's going to be a tight end one most weeks. So I didn't start Disley in the one league where I have him because I wanted to see how this plays out. I probably should have, only because he outscored Charles Clay. But nonetheless, those are really the only 3 guys. They ran 36 pass plays last night to 22 running plays. Again, 11 plays, 99 yards on the last drive of the game, which was meaningless. So the 36-22 is not where they want to be, but it might be where they have to be as things continue across the season for this. The QB statistically had very similar nights, roughly the same yardage, both with a couple of touchdowns, and Mitch Trubisky had a couple of interceptions. One was a tough throw. The other one was deflected, and then I think Russ had one as well. So I worry about Mitch Trubisky. As we turn the page over to the Chicago Bears, I worry about Mitch Trubisky's accuracy a little bit. Mm-hmm. He was, 22 of 36 last night? Correct me if I'm wrong. No, 25 of 34. 24, 35, somewhere in that range. Nonetheless, that's not bad on the surface. But one of those is a shovel pass, a couple more screens to Cohen. The interception was a bad throw. He underthrew Robinson pretty badly in one-on-one coverage.
Yep.
And the deflection, sometimes it's just the QB's fault, right? Like you gotta know where guys are. It's a good play by the defender, but sometimes you just got to know where these people are. And I'm just wondering about Trubisky's accuracy, but he is engineering them to winnable games. And Nagy and Helfrich are creating really interesting play calls, especially that shovel pass to Trey Burton. That's a really good play call. Very difficult to defend. I think it does play to a Trubisky strength where he can run a little bit more RPO.
I am with you on both counts, okay? I think that Nagy and the scheme looks really good. I do see elements of the Kansas City Chiefs offense where he came from in this offense, but they made the point on the telecast, the scheme and the imagination, the innovation can be there, but it is still on Mitch Trubisky to execute, and I am concerned about Mitch Trubisky. I got to tell you, there was a place there in the second quarter of yesterday's game. You know, it was kind of still a one-score game. It was like 7-0, then 10-0. They had a chance to put the hammer down on the Seattle Seahawks, and they couldn't. There was a series of like three or four mistakes in a row by Mitch Trubisky. It started with like a third down and four where they had a zone read, and Mitch Trubisky had a wide open lane on the inside to pick up the first down. He chooses instead to try to make a play and bounce it outside and get stuffed, right? Then they have to punt it away to the Seahawks. Then they get the ball right back on the first play. That was what you described, the underthrown ball to AR-15 that got picked off by Griffin, right? Then there was another interception in the second quarter. Then there should have been a third in the red zone where it was like gift wrap. He tried to make a play outside the pocket. He tried to keep the Seahawks in that game in the second quarter, and I was like, uh-oh, Russell Wilson's going to take advantage of this at some point in the second half, and it just didn't happen. These are all, to me, examples of where Matt Nagy, the scheme is there, but it is on Trubisky to, in fact, execute, and I'm a little bit concerned about Trubisky.
So those are the things I worried about going into the year, and it's why I threw a little bit of cold water on some of the Bears' projections. I think they ran 34 pass plays, 27 run plays last night. I think that's probably in the wheelhouse of where they want to be. If they could bring them as close to 50-50, I think they will be. Most teams are pass-heavy now anyway from a percentage standpoint. Very few teams have more run plays than pass plays. It's just the nature of things now. But I think that they get a little bit tighter on that, you know, 32-29 or something like that on pass-to-run play percentages. I think they'll feel pretty good about that. But you're right. Five sacks in the first half, they are laying weight and holding calls and the whole thing on the Seattle offensive line. They are dominating them. And the two interceptions plus the run play that you're talking about, it's a good note by you because Jason Witten commented on it. Had he just stayed inside and not tried to bounce it outside
for a
hero play, and even if it isn't, it's close enough that we can go on fourth and short. He was probably going to get a first down. You're right, because he could have dove for it. But even if he wasn't, and he gets touched down, and he's been within a
yard. Where they were field position wise,
yeah, and they run a lot of creative plays, Nagy and Helfrich will. So they're going to be the types of guys that are going to go for it in a lot of instances there. So those are my concerns. Your point, Allen Robinson, 10-for-83. I think that's very encouraging. Jordan Howard, 17 touches. He ends up with 68 total yards. Sort of a ho-hum night, a few catches in there. Tariq Cohen, only 5 touches last night. A lot of people were counting on him for a potentially big night, but 5 touches for only 25 yards. He's obviously electric in the return game, but if you're not getting yards for that, it doesn't really matter. So Anthony Miller, the rookie, with a touchdown there. And then we talked about the Trey Burton, 4 touches for 20 yards and a touchdown. One last note on the Trey Burton thing, though, is he got a carry last night for 2 yards and picked up a first down. For those of you that don't know, he played quarterback in college. And I just wonder if in some goal line packages, Trey Burton isn't the one carrying it and taking on some rushing touchdowns. It isn't something that I heavily considered during the preseason. But now, after seeing that last night, it sort of clicked in my head, you know what, they may be running some sub-packages for Trey Burton in goal line or short yardage scenarios. So in first down leagues, and clearly, it could increase his touchdown total. Even by 2 or 3 over the course of the year, Dane, it ends up getting him to double-digit touchdowns conceivably on the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've made this point a number of times that when it comes to this kind of tight end, you know, looking at, I mean, I may exaggerate here, but tight ends 5 through 15 almost, you know, it just depends on who gets in the end zone that week.
That's right.
And if Trey Burton can get in via the run, well, I'll take it, right? The other thing I thought with that, Mike, you know, they did the little shovel pass to Trey Burton. They gave him a carry. You know, these are now some of the things that they're putting on tape, right? And then what comes off of that? Things like the Philly play in the Super Bowl, right? So could they also be playing the long game, showing some of these things, knowing that they can be multiple off of it, but putting the easy, you know, putting like part one of it on tape, knowing that they can then adjust off of it later on in the season?
Yeah, I'll give you a sense of the tight end ones from this week. So in order, Travis Kelce came in with the most points. This is a full-point PPR league. Jesse James, second. Zach Ertz, third. Evan Engram, fourth. O.J. Howard, Austin Hooper, Jimmy Graham, Kyle Rudolph, Will Disley, and Trey Burton. So both tight ends from last night appear in the top 10. Ebron at 11, just outside of it. So you see some usual suspects, and you see some guys that are not so usual suspects there. In fact, I'm trying to – where's Gronk on this list?
He didn't have a big game.
Yeah, he did not at all.
Here's your point. To your point. Blewett, you know, like, you get in the end zone, you're a tight end one, right? The guys who were in the top 10 who did not get in the end zone were really only Zach Ertz, who came down with 11 balls, and that's kind of a special situation. We know about that. Then you got to go, you know, all the way down to Graham or Rudolph. Those are the only guys in the top, 15 that didn't get into the end zone. And so otherwise, it's peppered with guys who got a touchdown. Even say like a guy like Eric Ebron, you know, 3 for 26, but a touchdown, and that gets him into the top 10. So to your point, tight ends week to week are going to be those guys who hit pay dirt.
Yeah, Gronk was the 40th tight end this week. He had two catches for 15 yards. So, you know, and other guys like Jack Doyle, Ben Watson, other names that you normally see up near the top 12, way, way, way down the list. And, you know, we'll try to review stuff like this. Maybe every Tuesday we'll do stuff like this. Take a look at the ones at every position so you know exactly which guys are popping. And at the tight end position, I tend to think it's really important. So it gives you some sense of the volatility at the position. Mark Andrews, the rookie from Baltimore, he caught a touchdown the other night. He's 13th. Jordan Reed, Garrett Celek caught a touchdown. He's in your top 15. So, you know, George Kittle was a guy that was played everywhere in DFS, but Garrett Celek is the guy that scored the touchdown. So before we get to the next note, Fantasy Factor is the only DFS site with exclusively single-entry contests. It's a fun and recreational place to play with smaller leagues and flatter prize pools. They have great free promos like Survivor, Super Bowl Squares, and March Madness Bracket Contests. So sign up today. Go to fantasyfactor.com. That's fantasyfactor.com. So where to go next? Do you want to talk about how good my teams are again?
Just kidding. Sure, we could do that.
Just kidding. No, let's talk about our team just really briefly since we only have a minute. So we had a decision there between Matty Ice and Matt Stafford. I think we came out on top there. Our other decisions were like a LeSean McCoy or Randall Cobb scenario. We came out on top there. Are you feeling okay about McCoy's injury here? Do you think it's going to be a long-term thing?
I mean, he was injured
the other day, but I don't think it's going to be a bad deal.
I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing. They say he may miss a week or two, but I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to want to take him out of our lineup anyway next week because he's at Minnesota, right? So that's not something that I'm excited about regardless. I'm intrigued. I think our decision is going to be, you know, Randall Cobb. Or, to be quite honest, Mike, it could be time to take Sony Michel out of bubble wrap, okay?
Knock the dust off.
Exactly. He looked like the back they were going to use in a more traditional kind of way. And when I checked the matchups, they are in Detroit on Sunday Night Football the upcoming week, and the Detroit Lions have been getting gashed in the run game. You saw what Breida did last week, and you even saw what the Jets did week one with Crowell with a big long run also. So I might be intrigued about taking a chance with Sony Michel. You know, we have the cushion, Mike.
Yes, we do. We do. I'm a little bummed I don't have a little bit more of Matt Breida, but I loaded up with James Conner, and I couldn't do both guys. So that was really my choice with between the Austin Ecklers of the world and James Conner and Matt Breida. I went with James Conner really every time, so it didn't allow me to get the other guys. Dan and I'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about your waiver wire pickups for this week. It's FST, Mike and Dane, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build and optimize lineups for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Fired up on a Tuesday on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's FST with Mike and Dane. If you're hitting us up on Twitter, please do so. At FNTSY Radio, I'm at Mike Blewett. Dane Martinez, as always, at Spittin' Speeds, S-P-E-E-D-Z, at the end there. For those of you listening on TuneIn, iHeartRadio, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country, thank you. We appreciate you listening. So, Quick update on how terrible we are at picking games. I feel I'm pretty good so far with my fantasy teams, but as far as picking games are concerned, I'm not helping anybody out. I changed my mind too much over the course of the week, and while we have agreed to a Friday deadline, and I will stick by it, I changed my mind completely, including on Survivor picks. But I did advance this week with the Rams. You advanced with the Saints. Scott Engel did not advance, so he's 0-2 in his Survivor picks. We're going to keep going, even if we lose, just to give you our Survivor pick of the week, which I did. I lost Saints week one, even though in the competition where I put money on the line, I picked the Ravens, and then I picked the Saints where I put money on the line. But here, it's the Rams, and I advanced, and you picked the Saints and advanced.
Yep, absolutely. You know, we'll keep giving out our picks, and we'll have kind of fidelity to the model. We won't give out a team that we've already given out. But yes, you know, technically, I am the winner of this one. You get back on the horse with the Rams. You went 1-2 against the spread, the Titans being your lone win. I also went 1-2 against the spread in the games we gave out. The Bears last night were my one win. Scotty also went 1-2 against the spread last week. His one win was Sunday Night Football. He liked the Cowboys -3. You and I are 500 on the year so far. Scotty's two games below 500, but that's okay. We'll get back up on the good foot. I can probably, though, I can tell you right now, my Survivor pick for this week. I know it. I'm locked in. I'm not going to overthink it. I am taking the Minnesota Vikings at home against the Buffalo Bills without LeSean McCoy this week. I am telling you right now, the Vikings will be my Survivor pick this week.
I probably am going to be with you. I feel bad for Josh Allen. I feel bad for him. I think it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough introduction. You know, I'm happy on my over-under picks on the year. Raiders lose again. I have that under 8. I feel good about the Lions. They lose again. I have that under 8.
But did you get Tampa?
So Tampa is going the wrong way for me, obviously. Right. They're 2-0. I mean, they're playing a Monday night game at home against the Steelers. They're an energized team right now. This is the type of game, being a Steelers fan for a long time, that the Steelers actually win, back up against the wall kind of game. I think on paper they're the better team. They're just not playing like it, and Tampa is playing better than they are on paper. So I just would never anticipated them being down both corners and Philly not being able to annihilate them in the pass game. But they laid an egg. They just didn't. I mean, Tampa is playing well. I'm not being critical of their opponents. Tampa is playing well. I mean, they put 48 on the Saints, and then they blister Philly the first play out of the gate. Fitz throws an 80-yard touchdown to Deshaun Jackson that nobody can cover. So that's going the wrong way. I have a buy-in alternate team in the Patriots.
All right.
I have to see the way that's going. You know, that's not a bad loss for the Pats. Some people will say they got dominated, and so be it. But, you know, there's
on the road to a playoff team.
Yeah, there's sometimes an overzealous expectation that they're going to just run the table and go 14-2 every single year. And one of the games being when they rest everybody. They're not
exactly.
I mean, they're great, but they're not that great.
Yeah, I mean, let's say going into the season, let's say you had them for a 13-3 even, you know, which is even slightly more than I had them for, right? Let's say you had them for 13-3. What do you think the three losses were going to be? You know, maybe one at home, and then you think they're going to go 6-2 on the road. One of those two would be on the road to a non-division opponent that went to the playoffs. That's what this was. So I don't think it really changes much of the Patriots. Does getting Josh Gordon change anything for the Patriots, Mike?
That's a good question. So I think this is a classic Patriots move. I would also say is, for those of you being like, all right, let's see what his projections are going to be for the year, the Patriots churn these guys up and spit them out pretty quick if they don't fall in line. I've seen them do it a lot. They take a lot of chances. What they like to take chances with are professional football players, not college players. It's why they're happy to stockpile picks and not reach up and go and trade a bunch of picks to get up and get certain guys. Guys like Coney Ealy, who they had for a while, and they spit him out. He didn't even last through the offseason. Guys like, I mean, in the past at wide receiver, the Randy Moss thing worked out, but Chad Johnson didn't really do anything. And other guys that have been in here for a cup of coffee, like Kenny Britt or even Eric Decker, they decide whether or not they can fit, and they move along. Now, I think what this is a move for is, I think there was a look on Josh McDaniels' face the other day when they threw a little screen pass to Cordarrelle Patterson, and they tried to get him in space so he could spring upfield, and Patterson like tripped over his own feet. He caught the ball and he downed himself basically after a 2-yard catch. The look on McDaniel's face said everything. Like, I think he's super frustrated with Cordarrelle Patterson, and not just because of that play. I'm reading into it, obviously, but it was the immediate impression I got. I was like, man, it's just one play, but maybe this is more than one play. So I think they need more reliable depth at the position, because they don't want to rely, even when Edelman comes back, they don't want to rely on Philip Dorsett and Cordarrelle Patterson to make plays as they get deeper into the season.
Yeah, I agree. You talked about Josh McDaniels. I think you saw Brady expressing some frustration there a little bit as well. You saw him with his screaming on the sideline. There was also one drive where, like, on a third down, he just chucked it deep, you know, and he was like, let me just see if this will work. So I hear you. I personally don't. I think if I'm in fantasy leagues right now, though, I think I'm trying to flip Josh Gordon. I'm trying to take advantage maybe of an owner that's really excited because they still believe it's 2013, you know, because I don't know what Josh Gordon is going to do. I don't know if he's going to live up to any of the buzz, right? And you got to also remember, in a couple of weeks, this offense is going to be driven by Edelman, Gronk, and Hogan anyway. And so, you know, when we've seen Josh Gordon pop off, he was on a Cleveland Browns team where there was not, like, other options, you know? Now, he's in a fantasy herd, and so I don't know what the ceiling is for Josh Gordon. I think the ceiling is to be something viable for the Pats, but that's less viable for your fantasy team.
Yeah, I think it could be a situation where it's difficult to know which weeks to start him, right? Almost it's in the same way that if you're in a deep league, you're trying to figure out if Philip Dorsett is worth a start. Yeah, he was in week one, but he wasn't in week two or vice versa. So I think it could become difficult. I have Gordon in two leagues. There's no money on the line in either one, just to give you a sense of where my head was at. In Scott Fishbowl, it's a prestigious industry league, and it's a lot of fun, but there's no money on the line. And I took Josh Gordon because it is a league that you almost have to play it a little bit more like a roto league, Dane, because you're trying to score so many points to keep advancing through the playoffs, that Josh Gordon was the type of upside pick that I thought I could take early and see if I could make something happen. Keep in mind, I'm trying to beat 799 other people. So
right.
You have to take some swings. And Josh Gordon was a swing that I took. The other one, just a fun league. I'm playing with my nephew. And I think you're right. I think strategically you can try to flip Josh Gordon. He's played 12 games since the end of the 2013 season. He has played 12 games. Or maybe that's the end of the 2014 season. Nonetheless, very little action in the last several seasons. He's unbelievably talked about because of his ability, but the one thing I wonder, I hate to wildly speculate, but there were rumors that he just wasn't himself and he was late for a meeting. Josh is obviously drug tested a lot since he's in the NFL drug testing program. Are you waiting for the other shoe to drop? Because why? The fact that he was involved in trade offers with that hanging over his head was the curious part to me. There was as many as 8 to 10 teams calling to trade for Josh Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, and here's the thing. That's why I think, you know, Blewett, it wound up being a fifth-round pick. You know, it's a capitalistic society, right? At first, reports I was hearing was like, oh, it'll be a conditional pick. It'll be a seventh-round pick. Well, the market dictates what it is. You know, if there were legitimately 8 teams and we're hearing everything from New England to the Jets to Dallas to San Francisco, then that's the market that there was for Josh Gordon. And so I think, yeah, that's why you get all the way up to a fifth-round pick. But I still don't know that he's going to move the needle anywhere. Like I said, I'm not excited about it. I would try and flip him to another owner in your league that is more excited about it than I moving forward.
Yeah. So before we get back to waiver wire stuff, if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the props builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against, just you and the prop that you choose. So go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the props builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So, excuse me. waiver wires. So, major injuries. What do we need to talk about there? I mean, there's always injury news. Week one, after week one, there was so much injury fallout that it was hard to get through on the Sunday shows that I did the other day. There were like 27 different notes that we had to talk about, simply because some, even though they're not players that were owned, like the Titans were missing both their tackles. And I thought it could really impact the game in a big way. Right. That ended up being a tough watch of a game, but I like the fact, I'll go back to the Titans for a second since they are one of my over picks on the year. I'm happy they won that game in the manner that they did, because it was through aggressive play calling and with a backup quarterback that just kind of grinded out a win for them.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You talk about kind of the picks and how our Friday deadline happens. I also give out picks to my Stats Overbeat Cypher on another platform where I give out more. And one of the ones that I gave out was, in fact, Tennessee plus at what I got. It was like the 3 at because it went down from 4.5 to 2 throughout the course of the week. But I got to tell you this, Blewett. You know, you talk about kind of changing picks. On Sunday morning when I heard that the Titans would have, you know, Blaine Gabbert under center, I certainly went there and changed my pick back to Houston, and I hate that the most, you know? So that's why I'm always like, I need to just go with my gut and stick to it. I have my lady all the time being like, stick with your first gut. That's why you're an expert. But I was like, nah, baby. Like, they're going to Blaine Gabbert. This is a legitimate reason to go off the Titans, and it still wind up biting me in the hind parts, Mike.
Yeah. Ultimately, we, you know, we're doing our best here. I think we're doing okay.
Yeah. I think we're doing just fine. The best guys in Vegas go like 55%, 57%. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's why we give out 3 picks, because if we go 2-1, which we are going to on most weeks, I can say we will be over 500 for the season. If not, you know, tell Mike Cardano about it, but we will be over 500. That's why we go 2-1, 3 picks, because 2-1, you're still making that cash.
Yeah, so here we go. Players to add: James Washington. I drafted him in one league, which is a keeper league, but I needed to make a move after week one, and I cut him after 1 week. And in that league in the past, I've done my best to hang on to guys, and I just didn't feel like I could do it. I picked up Philip Lindsay, and I actually didn't play him. It's okay because I won, but I felt like I needed more running back depth and wide receiver depth. And I'm already in that keeper league invested with Sony Michel, James Conner, and Calvin Ridley, all 3 guys whom I could keep next year. So trying to hang on to James Washington, hoping something would happen. You know how I feel about rookie wide receivers. Rostering 2 just wasn't an option for me. But now, of course, he scores and he's back in the good graces here with fantasy fans.
Yeah. I would say so. But to be quite honest, you know, I think what we see here so early in the season, you know, we talk about it with the overreaction Monday, stuff like that. It's still very early in the season. Teams are still kind of defining how they want to win. Teams are still kind of getting used to new personnel and new schemes. And I think the pendulum keeps on swinging. It's going to take a couple of weeks before these things normalize and we see where people's roles truly are in the offense. I talk about it with, you know, kind of the rookie running backs. We talk about it with wide receivers that may be ascending. We talk about it with, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers tight ends. There's a lot of places around this league where roles are still being solidified. Mike.
Yeah, so he started the game against the Chiefs in 11 personnel. That's one running back, one tight end with 3 wide receivers. And he lined up outside of 93% of his snaps. And he ran, he was out there for 80% of the snaps, but he was outside on those plays for 93% of it, making Juju Smith-Schuster basically a full-time slot receiver. 88% of his routes were run inside the other day. That is really good news for Juju's fans in PPR leagues. I don't think it'll take the top off of his explosiveness too much because they'll still run some plays from him. Obviously, he had a huge game the other day, 19 targets. But I think that's good news for Juju Smith-Schuster and James Washington all in one.
Yeah, it is. But then again, you know, you never know. Like, the game flow was so, you know, in this case, was such a big deal, right? They had to keep up with Patty Mahomes, right? So on Monday Night Football against Tampa, yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick could be out there slinging it for 400 yards, but the game flow could be entirely different. I don't know that you can depend on a guy like James Washington if they're on a team where, you know, most people still believe the Steelers will win their fair share of games. They'll be up in the second half. you know, and it'll be a little bit different game script. So that's what I mean, you know, is what we've seen for game flow from the Steelers something that is consistent? And with a guy like James Washington, sure, we saw that, you know, and Antonio Brown is a little bit pissed off talking on, you know, social media to trade me and find out. But remember, over time, we're going to get Lev Bell back. Over time, you know, these sorts of things. And I would just say the game script facing Patty Mahomes and his 6 touchdowns is not the kind of template or example to extrapolate out from.
Agreed. So we'll keep going down through the list. A guy that I have in a dynasty league that I really almost started the other day, but I went with Jerron Brown over him last night, is Antonio Callaway, the rookie from the wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns. He got a start in week 2. I think that probably continues. I think you saw what his key ability is at the end of the Saints game the other day, despite the fact that they choked that game away in the browniest way possible. Tyrod throwing a really nice deep ball and Callaway running underneath it. So he has that kind of ability. He played on 81% of the Browns snaps, 4 targets, 3 for 81, and that big touchdown. So what are your thoughts on Callaway?
Yeah. So my thoughts on Callaway actually dovetails into another question I have. I'm not so sure about Callaway, and the reason why is Rashard Higgins. I'm intrigued, honestly, Mike. I'm intrigued by Rashard Higgins as a guy who, you know, especially without Josh Gordon, with Jarvis Landry a little bit banged up, he was limited going into Thursday Night Football. I'm wondering if Higgins can also kind of split that workload. I'm worried about Callaway because I think him and Higgins are going to kind of split that number 2 opportunity.
I mean, entirely possible, but you know, they spent a decent amount of draft capital on Callaway. Higgins has been in this system for a long time and hasn't really established himself in any but I would find it hard to believe that Callaway is just going to sort of take over. They did give him the ball a couple of times to carry it as well. So overall, he had 5 touches for 89 yards and a score. 4 targets as opposed to Higgins, 7. Landry had 7. As you said, Landry's banged up and Joku had 7. So you might be looking at the fantasy herd, as you like to phrase it, more so than looking at one guy over the other. But I have Callaway. I'm not looking to get Higgins. I don't want to invest too much more in this offense. So it's Mike and Dane. We'll come back. We'll keep doing waiver wires, and we'll take a look at the games ahead for this week. It's Mike and Dane on FST. Be right back.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
NFL season is in full swing, but you can still win 2018 World Series tickets playing Daily Fantasy Baseball. The entry is free. So go to DailyRoto.com and find out how DKMS is trying to eradicate blood cancer. Not only will you get educated on their wonderful mission, but you will find a link to free DFS baseball contests throughout the rest of the MLB season hosted by Fantasy Draft with a prize of 2 tickets to a 2018 World Series game. So for anyone not interested playing DFS, text FNTSY Sports to 50555 to get involved in a great cause by DKMS and see what you can do to help eradicate blood cantercYou'll be better for it. So again, that's text Fantasy Sports, FNTSY Sports, to 50555 and get involved in the cause. So there we go. We're keeping going through waiver wires. Take a look at the early lines as well for week 2. But Ito Smith is another guy on waiver wires, available just about everywhere. I don't think he's on anybody's radar for starting him yet, but if you're a Tevin Coleman guy or you've had some other injuries, maybe you're a Devontae Freeman guy and didn't have Tevin Coleman, hopefully you've gone out there and get Ito Smith. He can provide some depth there because Freeman is out multiple weeks with a knee injury, and Tevin Coleman is really sucking up most of the touches there. So if Tevin Coleman went down, Ito Smith would be the next guy up. He played in 30% of the snaps in week 2 against Carolina. 10 touches, 54 yards. Obviously, it's viable. 6 point yards per next gen stats. Smith gained 6.9 yards after a defender closed within 1 yard, the second best clip for running backs behind Matt Breda. So I know we're talking deep leagues, but that's what we need to do. We need to take a look at all these guys.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. There's places I would go before Ito Smith because, like, he is now, in best case scenario, he's like the part B of a short-term, you know, timeshare kind of situation. I'd rather go to guys like Giovanni Bernard, who we think is going to be the lead of a timeshare in a short-term way. You know, and people say, like, 2 weeks for Joe Mixon. Sony Michel just had this injury, and he missed 5 weeks. You know, so that could be a third of the fantasy season. I would spend money on Gio if he is available. Another guy, remember, Aaron Jones coming back from suspension. Take a check to see if he's going to be available in your league. I mean, he's probably eaten up. And I go back to this, Blewett. Does Austin Eckler have standalone value?
I think so. It's going to be a deeper league, but you know we're going to start hitting bye weeks here in a couple of weeks, and I think Austin Eckler is a guy to have. During drafts, in fact, I think Craig Carton, during our draft, as we had drafted Melvin Gordon, we had lined up Austin Eckler, and Craig Carton took him, and Eckler is proving to have standalone value. We pivoted and went to James Conner, who, like
that
I said,
I was
really on all during the preseason, but clearly I'm thrilled at his start, not as a Steelers fan, but thrilled for fantasy purposes. But nonetheless, I do think Eckler has standalone value. I just wonder if when the defense gets fully healthy, if you know they slow down the pace of the offense somewhat. Do you know what I mean? I mean but who knows? I mean they had to keep up with Kansas City in week one, and in week two, they were just dominating. So it wasn't
right. They just pulled Gordon because he was gassed or something like that. They said
he already scored three touchdowns. It was heat going on out there. But I think the Gio Bernard point is spot on. He's the guy that you're really going to want. That's a real bummer for Mixon owners because I think you were seeing a little something there. They were getting him a lot of touches, and then boom, he's done for a while. Like you said, it could be the 2 to 4 weeks thing. I buy 4 weeks.
I think that's optimistic. Yeah, I think that's optimistic. And also remember, Mixon has had a history of these issues with the knee already, so I could see them, especially honestly, Blewett, especially if they see themselves as contenders. Let's say in the next, you know, let's say 4 weeks from now, there's something like 5-1. They're 4-2, and Giovanni Bernard is kind of, you know, filling in adequately. I think there's no reason why they wouldn't be cautious of this, especially if they believe that they have football to be played in December and January.
Yeah, I think a few other guys we could talk about waiver wire wise. We've talked about them probably. We talked about Tyler Boyd on Friday after the game. So Tyler Boyd's going to be out there. I'm looking at one of my leagues in particular. Austin Seferian Jenkins is still available out there going up against Tennessee this weekend. Antonio Callaway, we mentioned. Ito Smith, we mentioned. Willie Snead. Jesse James obviously has a really good game the other day. We just mentioned the tight end one scenarios. I just don't know if Jesse James is the guy moving forward.
Right.
Vance McDonald was the guy in the playoff game. And I'm saying this as a Steelers fan. I think it's good that they have two guys that are capable. But for me to recommend starting Jesse James down in Tampa on a Monday night, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm going to hope for a touchdown if that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, you talk about these tight ends. Kind of like these tight end committees on some teams now, right? Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football have them going on. One tight end that I would mention, honestly, is also, I guess, part of a tight end committee. But I'm talking about Eric Ebron. It looks to me like Ebron is the pass-catching guy. I know our guy, the King, Scott Engel, was very high on Jack Doyle coming into the season. It looks like Jack Doyle is the better blocker of the two, and that Ebron is out there more as the receiving kind of threat. You mentioned it at the top of the show, Blewett. If you get a touchdown as a tight end, you're in the tight end one conversation. Eric Ebron with two touchdowns in 2 weeks. I'm a little bit leaning towards it. Might be Ebron that's the pass-catching guy in Indianapolis. So he's a guy I would keep an eye on. He is currently owned in Yahoo leagues, which I know is more kind of public stuff, but he's owned in 55% of Yahoo leagues, which means you could probably go out and get him.
I'll get to one more tight end in a minute, but first let me tell you to head on over to DailyRoto.com, the site that has produced $7 million winners, and click on Go Premium. There you're going to gain access to a line optimizer that will help you compose your daily fantasy rosters on both FanDuel and DraftKings. Not only has DailyRoto.com produced 7 millionaires, but it's produced millions more in winnings for its subscribers. And if it's sports wagering you're into, click on the new sports betting tab, where you're going to be able to use the same tools and algorithms that's produced all those winnings for money line picks, picks against the spread, game totals, player props, where you can capitalize player performances without having to worry about salary caps. That's DailyRoto.com and click on Go Premium, the industry website where millionaires are made, literally. The last guy I would mention, and he's somebody that I had in a deep league, is Jake Butt from the Denver Broncos. He's a guy who missed all of his rookie season with an ACL injury. He was thought to potentially be battling the tight end spot out with Jeff Hoyerman, but I can tell you, in taking a look at the targets from this past weekend, 6 for Jake Butt, 3 for Jeff Hoyerman, Butt for 4 catches for 48 yards after a couple of catches in week 1. I know it's a little bit of a deeper league, but as we talk about the tight end position every week, Dane, we know it's a mess, and I think Jake Butt may be becoming a real option here for Case Keenum.
That's possible. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's possible. For me, I'm not super high on Jake Butt. For me, it would come down to a league-by-league kind of decision where you see he's up against which other kind of options, because I could see other options that I would go ahead of Butt. You know, like, I hear you. But, for example, you know, I might go with Tyler Eifert if he's still available. I might go Vance McDonald if he's still available. I might go Jonnu Smith if he's still available, right? So I can hear you that Jake Butt may be a growing option in that Denver pass game, but there's still other options that I may prioritize over him.
Yeah, it's just that Smith didn't get targeted at all the other day, so it's a huge bummer on that front. But let me stick with Denver there for a second. How worried are you about the Royce Freeman-Philip Lindsay dynamic?
Yeah, that's why, remember, I love it when you do the snap counts. You know, I love it when you do the snap counts, and that's kind of the main one that I am very, very interested in, okay? Philip Lindsay with 28, Devontae Booker with 22 last week, and then Royce Freeman third among that group with 16. I do believe that over time, Freeman's going to be this early down guy, and I'm worried if I'm a Devontae Booker owner, because I thought Philip Lindsay would be at first this PPR guy, but now with Philip Lindsay getting early down work also, I am slightly worried, but not enough to cut him just yet. I'm still going to bench Royce Freeman and see what I have moving forward, because I think this is something that's going to be game dependent.
15 touches to 8, Lindsay to Freeman this past week. So we will do the snap counts. I'll be here tomorrow with Dane in order to do that, keep updating you on injury updates and waiver recommendations and the like. So how about some early look at the Week 3 lines? We'll blow through some of these in the last couple of minutes. Thursday night game, we actually got Jets at Browns. We'll do a full preview of that on Thursday, but Jets at Browns. Browns, an early 3.5-point favorite. Is this the week that the Bud Light fridge is finally open?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit worried. When this concept originally came out, I told people, look out for week 3. Be at one of these bars on September 20th. I had a text about that. You know, we shall see. I think the 3.5 is interesting. They give you that hook as the Jets go in there on a short week. What I'll say is more interesting, Mike, look at the total on this game. 39 as an over-under. You know, you rarely see totals that low in the 30s, but then we know about Thursday night football is somewhat sloppy. These are not offenses that light it up. I'm intrigued by the total a little bit even more than the line, because I think the line will move a little bit. That total, though, at 39, that's pretty low, huh, Blewett?
Yeah, very. That's as low as you're going to see in a regular season game this early in the year. But, you know, rookie quarterback, sort of inept offense/coaching on one side. It's amazing how they lost both of the games to start the season. I mean, it's the browniest start to a season ever. One other team that jumps out at me as we continue through taking a look at a couple of these lines, the Bengals are an underdog again. On the road,
yeah, that's
obviously.
Crazy. On the road.
In Carolina, but they're 2-0, and they've played pretty well so far.
Yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hope that goes to 3.5. I'm going to wait, hope that goes to 3.5, and then jump on it once I get the hook. That's what I'm going to do, because I do. Do you think that that's because the loss of Joe Mixon, though?
I think that's got certainly something to do with it.
It's a tough front seven in Carolina.
Although
yeah.
In listening to guys, I listen to some podcasts that have sports book managers on them.
Right.
And I can tell you that they do not use running backs as a significant line moving factor.
True.
So it's maybe a half point, though. Maybe. Quarterback, very different. We saw a massive line fluctuation on Sunday when it was thought to be that Mariota was out and then back in and then back out. So that line was moving a point and a half just on Sunday alone. One last game to take a look at before we make our leave. The Houston Texans, despite being 0-2, are nearly a touchdown favorite with the Giants. And the largest line that I've seen definitely this year, the Vikings, a 17-point favorite hosting the Bills.
Yeah, the 17-point line is crazy. That's a stay away from me. I never touch spreads that big. You never know. I do think the Texans one is interesting. The one piece I'll manage on the Texans, remember now, the Texans have not played a home game this year. They were at New England. They were at Tennessee. They finally returned home for a non-conference home game. I kind of like them. Six is a big number, but I do think the Texans will get on the board on Sunday.
Steelers favored at Tampa on Monday night right now. I wonder if we see some line movement there. Dana and I will be back here tomorrow going over snap counts, waiver wires, and taking a look at these lines in week 3. Thanks for joining us, folks. Have a good day.